Well, hello. Welcome into another episode of the Patriots Podcast. I'm Sean. He's JJ.
Hello.
We are back after a week off, and we are ready to talk some playoff football. The conference championship games have just been played last weekend, and before we get to those, we might as well touch on some of the teams that went down in the divisional.
Mm-hmm.
Most notably, the team that took out the 2019 Pats also takes out the team with the best regular season record this year, and that's the Baltimore Ravens, who have the presumptive MVP, presumptive coach of the year, the most Pro Bowlers of any roster, and they go down by 16 points.
They go down hard. Yeah, the Ravens really didn't show up at all, which is, you know, they were the hottest team in the NFL, best record, all the stuff you just said. Really, Tennessee, you know, we know what happened to them in Kansas City, but they, you know, they had a lot of firepower. They were playing old school smash mouth football, which is really tough to beat. And then it was almost a perfect concoction for the Ravens to lose also, because, you know, we've talked about it. They took week 17 off. They had another week off. So not only are you now have to, you know, you have 3 weeks off and take, you know, you're not ready, as ready to go as you would be, especially versus the team Tennessee. Physical. They're going to run the ball down your throat. That's what we're going to do. Earl Thomas talked shit about the Patriots not tackling. Then he gets fucking turned around trying to tackle Derrick Henry, which is beautiful. But I feel like they heard the noise. It's almost what I was, you know, after a couple weeks of thinking about it, it's based, you know, everyone's saying for weeks, no, who's going to be able to beat the Ravens? No one's going to beat them. They're at home. They're like unstoppable. They're untouchable. Lamar Jackson, he's killing it. He should be MVP and blah, 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 all this stuff. And then they come out and they go down really quick and they panic and they go out of their signature moves, which is run the ball. And didn't Lamar Jackson throw like 40 or 50 passes or something?
He threw 59 passes.
Yeah. They haven't thrown that in like three games combined this year.
Yeah, exactly. There were 9 handoffs the entire game.
So literally they went down, they completely panicked and fell apart. And we're like, oh, we got to throw the ball. And it's like, no, you guys are the best running team in the league. That's how you got to 14-2. Just chill. It's not like the Titans can put on 40 on you. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, and a lot of people are laying this at Lamar Jackson's feet. And the biggest part of it for me is the coaching staff panicked.
Panicked.
Like we just
absolutely
said,
panicked.
They stopped handing the ball off. They stopped doing the read option. It was simply Lamar Jackson's either going to throw it or run it. And more often than not, I mean, they had twice as many pass attempts as they did rushing. And this is a game where, yes, Tennessee went up early and they got that lead, but Baltimore was within one score at halftime.
Yeah, I mean,
just didn't need to freak out like that.
It didn't make sense. I mean, Lamar didn't look himself, you know, his dominant self. He really wasn't getting much help, but I don't think he looked great. But yeah, I don't completely blame him. I mean, he's a second year player, right? Still second year.
Yeah, second year player. Only a
second year player, and your coach, yeah, your coach had a meltdown. What happened?
And got,
really
and
did
got
the same thing.
Absolutely whooped in the coaching department. Dean Pease was terrific, and what the Titans did in the red zone was outstanding. When you got like third and goal from the 15 at the opening part of the game, and their Titans tight end makes an incredible one handed catch, and then later on in the game, it's third and goal from the 1, and they decide to throw a pass with Derrick Henry when everybody in the entire country thinks obviously it off to him.
You're going to hand it off. I know, right?
Brilliant.
And just the other, earlier in the game, you could see, you know, the cracks starting to widen with the Ravens and their coaching staff going for it on like a 4th and 3 on their own 40, which is basically giving the Titans more points. It's like, what are you doing? And then didn't later in the game, they decided not to punt and go for it or something? And you could have pinned them back, but instead you gave them the ball at like the 55 or something like that.
Well, they went for it on 4th down a number of times, and they were just routinely unsuccessful. It was like the first time we're just going to do a QB sneak, and then the next time we're going to run a QB off tackle. And
yeah, it was pretty bad. So
for 4 on.
And I think you really, that was, it's funny, you know, reflecting as not, you know, as a Patriots fan, not being here. And you always say one of the biggest things the Patriots have going for them, once they get to the playoffs, if they get that bye type of thing, they kind of just, you know, it's not always that they're playing incredible. It's more of they're not making those mistakes or getting too ahead of themselves or basically shooting their own selves in their foot. Well, you know, and that allows them to keep keep going. They're not making those mistakes. The losers of this weekend, I feel like that was, or, you know, both weekends, that was kind of the thing, the theme. That's outside of a couple games, you know, like Kansas City, Houston goes up 24-0 in Kansas City. 24-0. Now, Kansas City, we know they have all kinds of firepower, but, you know, 24-0 is ridiculous. And then they basically puked all over themselves.
Yeah. I love
the moment was too big for him.
I love the narrative about this game that everyone's so angry at, or they think Bill O'Brien made a huge mistake when he kicked a field goal. The Texans are up 21-0. He gets into like a 4th-and-2, whatever it is, in makeable field goal range. He goes for the field goal to bring him to 24-0. And they're like, and that was the turning point. You know, he took his foot off the gas pedal. Let's assume he scores the touchdown there. The next possession is the exact same result. It's a kickoff to the Chiefs, who then scored like 50 consecutive points.
Yeah.
It's like, does that 4 points make a difference? Why would you even begin to make that argument?
Yeah, Bill O'Brien knew his defense was a sham. That's what that game showed me. Here's a guy that knows his defense has gotten lucky as shit in this first quarter, and they're going to fall apart. I mean, he went for it. He tried to fake punt it from his own 30 when they were still up by, I think, 2 scores, and effectively gave them a touchdown.
Well, they were going to get that touchdown anyway, the way they played before, the possession before that and the, like, 5 possessions. There was no stopping them.
You got to figure it out. You got to figure that out. Then you also had Green Bay beat Minnesota. Kirk Cousins basically folded.
Well, the 49ers beat Minnesota.
I'm sorry, 49ers beat Minnesota. Kirk Cousins just couldn't handle the pressure. The Niners didn't have to do a whole lot, you know?
Yeah, that was the game that I expected whichever defensive line was able to dominate the opposing offensive line was going to win, just because both of those quarterbacks are pocket passers, let's say. Mm-hmm. it was proven that Minnesota's offensive line can't really pass protect, which is a big problem when you have a, as before mentioned, pocket passer, a.k.a. statue in the pocket. And they're going to extend Kirk Cousins now. I mean, he's under contract this season, and then he would become a free agent after that. But I think they're going to extend him. They're going to go all in on this Dalvin Cook plus play action behind it, the same idea that the Titans are going to do with Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill. And the problem is that I just don't know if the Vikings offensive line can hold up.
Yeah, I think the Vikings only ran the ball 9 times in that game.
Yeah, another team that just gave up on it. But then the Niners were absolutely taking it away.
Yeah.
Taking away the run game. And they were forced. They were just going into this drop back pass game. And, they were giving all the attention to Stephon Diggs. And they were saying, hey, can you beat us with Adam Thielen and holding the ball in the pocket for 4 seconds? That's just not something that.
Clearly not. And then the Packers beat Seattle in a pretty competitive game.
It's the only competitive weekend.
Aaron Rodgers basically was just playing out of his ass and making every freaking third down a completion for a first down. But Seattle just didn't have anything outside Russell Wilson.
Yeah, but Russell Wilson in the second half, isn't it? It's just terrifying.
Oh, he's unbelievable.
They were down 21-3 at halftime, and Russell Wilson sure as shit scores 20 points in the second half.
Yep.
And is just right there at the
He's just, he was the MVP this year, and there's a reason for it. And he just, he was the whole team, and he almost won it. Single-handedly.
Yeah, imagine, I saw this written on Twitter. It's like, imagine if they used the second half play calling in the first half.
Yeah, right.
Or the second half game plan, where they actually gave the ball to Russell Wilson instead of just giving it to some retired running back who's back there.
Yeah, unbelievable. So this past weekend, Tennessee went to Kansas City in an up-and-down game for both teams. Kansas City ends up being the winner. Tennessee went up, what, 17-7?
Yeah, 17-7. So,
and Kansas City, once again, just not a hot start. They are, for whatever reason, this team is not good at getting off quick. But second half, they, you know, it's like they will score in every possession. It really doesn't make much sense to me.
Yeah, until the final 5 minutes of the game when Andy Reid's clock management takes over.
Yeah, he blew it and almost let Tennessee back in.
Wasn't that so funny? They almost got back in that game.
I mean, if Ryan Tannehill was a legitimate quarterback, I know we've talked a little bit about, you know, how he's supposed to be really good and this, that, and the other thing. He did nothing in the playoffs.
No.
He threw the ball for 160 passing yards in the 2 games he won, and then finally they were like, hey, we actually need you to throw the ball, and he couldn't do it for the goddamn life of him.
That's the thing. He's a play-action passing quarterback. It's like you see it with Jared Goff is the best version of this, but Ryan Tannehill is, and Kirk Cousins, those guys are in that mold. And there's when you get into a drop-back pass situation, which is what happens when you're playing the Chiefs and you're down 20 points, or you know, even 7 points when you're down. But if you're in one of these situations, then you need a drop-back pass game, and so many of these quarterbacks are unable to do that. That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. For the future of the position, it's like you either have to have a drop-back pass game, a straight one, like Tom Brady's the ideal example, somebody who just drop-back pass, or you need a guy that creates time with his legs. Now, Patrick Mahomes is both of those. That's what makes him so dangerous. Whereas you get somebody like Russell Wilson, who is, but all these young quarterbacks that are making plays with their legs, Joe Burrow in college, Deshaun Watson. Mm-hmm. Deshaun Watson's not really a great drop back passer, but it's time with his legs, and then people open up. Aaron Rodgers has been doing this for ages. I mean, that's what he does best.
Yep.
And so unless you have one of those two things, I don't think you're a championship caliber quarterback. And you know what's funny is that Jimmy Garoppolo might win the Super Bowl and be neither one of those things.
Right.
So
it's crazy.
Might have just proved my point wrong right there. But the thing is, around him, the Niners have an unbelievable.
Oh, everything. They're the most balanced outside of quarterback. Before we go to that game real quick, you know, Tennessee, as great of a story as it was, you know, Derrick Henry only ran for 69 yards. I want to say he had maybe 20 carries.
Yeah, 19.
Vrabel started to get a little nervous. I mean, he pulled some stuff out of his ass, and in the end, that fake punt out was actually successful.
I'm so
some
glad other stuff to bring that up.
But it was great.
It's a fake punt on 4th and 15 when you're down 20 points in the fourth quarter. That's classic Andy Reid to let that off.
Yeah, and if he screwed that up, everyone would have been flipping out on him. But they get, you know, once again, they went away from their game plan. I don't think, I know it was the Chiefs, I know what you're thinking and everything, but it was like, you know, they go, oh, we stopped the run. Well, they didn't really run the ball in the second half, and that's when Derrick Henry gets going. They were one big run from Derrick Henry away from being back in that game until basically, you know, 10 minutes left in the fourth or whatever, 5 minutes left in the fourth, whatever it was. But I was waiting, you know, that's what we saw in the Patriots. It was a close game. And then, oh, Derrick Henry just goes for 40 yards and bowls over three people, and then you can't stop it.
Yeah.
And it's like you were waiting for that and for Tennessee to do that in the second half. And they just never did because they kind of panicked and they were down 7. And, you know, maybe this team just ran out, you know.
All right.
But it's that was a good run by them.
You know, it was a 4-point game going into the fourth quarter, and still Derrick Henry only winds up with 19 carries where Ryan Tannehill throws the ball over.
Right, that's wrong.
That's the wrong form.
It's the wrong formula. So now on the San Francisco Green Bay game.
The Packers coaching staff, wow.
And I mean, that's the most stunning, not stunning that the Niners win, but the fashion they won in. They ran the ball 220 yards. Raheem Mostert, who's been, they said, like 7 or 8 teams or something.
Yeah.
The guy was, you know, good coming into the end of the year, good player. 220, he, like, set every 49ers playoff rushing record.
Oh, yeah.
Like, at least a lot of them. 4 touchdowns. Jimmy Garoppolo threw the ball, what, 8 times? 9 times?
I think it was 6 for 8, yeah. Mostert had 4 touchdowns in the first half.
I mean, they literally, Green Bay was like, okay, we can't stop the run, and we're not going to try.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it.
That's the thing, is they made 0 adjustments.
I don't, like, I mean, we've talked about game plans in the past with what Bill, you know, try to get them to run the ball and stuff like that to keep the ball out of the quarterback's hands. But this is Jimmy Garoppolo, who people, you know, a lot of people have been skeptical on if he can make the throws when they count. So it's like, why the fuck wouldn't you put him on him? Just cover Kittle, and you'll probably be okay.
Exactly.
You know, they've got some other players for sure, but you can't let up 7 to 10 yards per play against a run.
Yeah, all you got to look at
everybody
is what the Niners have done successfully this season. They're the number 2 rushing offense in the NFL and the number 13 passing. They like to run the ball. They're number 2 in rushing attempts and number 29 in passing attempts.
Right.
That's what they want to do. And if your defensive game plan is to allow them to do that at maximum efficiency, then you don't deserve to be a coach.
Right. They never, ever, ever once went to like, okay, let's load the box. We can't let this happen. This is embarrassing.
Right.
So
I mean, they were running in the fourth quarter. That's the only way that you can wind up with single-digit passing number in perfect weather.
Right. And it was never – I mean, it was out of hand, but here you have Aaron Rodgers. And that's the other thing I wanted to get to. I don't know about you, but the conversation of Aaron Rodgers being one of the best of all time and better than, you know, just a tick under Tom Brady, possibly above Peyton Manning, I think that's all trash, especially after this game. You know, this guy's in his mid-30s. He's a hell of a talent. But this is his fourth NFC championship he's lost or something?
Third. I believe he's 1-3 now. But he's lost his last three. He lost 2014, 17.
He's won how many?
One.
Just one. Okay, I thought you said three. I'm sorry.
He's
1-3, right. Exactly. And especially in a game like this, yes, they have a really good defense and everything. But he was just – it looked like at a certain point he had given up. And, like, before the first half was over.
I know. That's
literally looked – it was like 20 – you know, whatever San Fran was up, I don't remember. But they were up by so few scores. And it's like, okay, well, you know, you got a great quarterback. You have Devontae Adams over there. You have a good running back. You have good offense. This is okay. This isn't that bad. And he gave up. He threw a pick. He fumbled a snap. Game over.
The fumbled snap was mind-blowing.
That can still happen.
How do you fumble a snap in a playoff game? I was trying to put a number on it. How many snaps he's taken? I mean, it's over 10,000.
Oh, ridiculous. And he didn't even get the ball. He didn't even touch the ball.
Yeah. I mean, they run about 1,000 offensive plays. You must practice 9 times more than you play in terms of snaps. I mean, mm-hmm. 10,000 a year. He's over 100,000 in his life, and he drops one in a playoff game.
In the biggest situation ever. I mean, now it's just unfortunate. I mean, you know, whatever you think about the guy personally or not, he's an all-world talent at quarterback, and they just can't win. I mean, his window is closing.
It's closing rapidly, and it's not
helpful. He's dealt with a lot of injuries. We know how that goes. You know, how long you can play with the new quarterbacking rules and stuff like that. But his resume has not lived up to the hype.
Definitely. He will absolutely most talented. He'll be right in that conversation with John Elway, mm-hmm. with Patrick Mahomes, really. Mm-hmm. And he's about as talented, especially he's got great legs. He's been showing that. But arm talent-wise, Patrick Mahomes won it. But yeah, you're right. Rodgers, he came in, replaced a legend. Within his third season as a starter, he wins a Super Bowl. The following, he puts up one of the best quarterback seasons ever. I think his passer rating was like 150. He had like 45 touchdowns to 6. Stupid. Mm-hmm. And then since then, they've won a lot of games, but they haven't won the necessary to get there. And how much of that points to exactly what you were talking about? In the first half when they're losing, partially because of him. I mean, a lot of it had to do with the defense not stopping anybody. But the body language he's got out, I mean, he's in the Hall of Shame for worst body language. Is that guy, that's the leader of your team? He's hanging his head, pouting, he looks like he's ready to blame somebody. I mean, there is absolutely, he's not lifting his teammates at all.
Yeah, and I mean, especially for such a seasoned vet, you know, we've seen all quarterbacks pout and this and that and the other thing. But, you know, the playoffs is usually a little different animal for a lot of guys. And it's, as if any, you know, it's a long game. You're not playing an offense that's going to put up 50 on you. You know what I mean? It's like if you can do something, you can get back in this game. There's plenty of time. And he had checked out. So I thought that was pretty bad. I didn't want to see that. I wanted to see a more competitive game there.
But it just shows that Niners.
Yeah. So for the big one, Kansas City versus the San Francisco 49ers in Miami. It's an interesting Super Bowl. You got the best offense versus arguably the best defense in the Niners. To me, honestly, my personal opinion is I can't stand that both of these teams are in there because I think they both play like they're a bunch, especially Kansas City. Kansas City plays, the whole team plays like they have won everything and they're unbelievable and they're better than everybody else and they haven't won shit. And I always hate those teams. We've seen them in the past. And I just can't stand it. It's like you guys haven't won shit and you're acting like you're talking out there like you are the best team to ever play the game. It's like you've never won anything.
Is this Travis Kelce?
The Chiefs. That's Travis Kelce as the leader of the team. That's a joke in itself.
I know.
For Christ's sake. Frank Clark talking shit about Derrick Henry before the game and then after the game. Oh, yeah, we shut him down. But like, it's like, dude, you just sound like an idiot. Garbage all around. And then the Niners are kind of the same way. They just talk and talk.
Who talks on that? And Kittle?
Sherman. Sherman talks a shitload. I don't know. I feel Garoppolo, I'm a little sour about, you know.
Come. What has he done?
What is it? I don't know. You know me. I never was really sold on Jimmy Garoppolo.
Has two Super Bowl rings.
Yeah, I know he does. But the fact that he's made it to a Super Bowl just because his team is so freaking good kind of, like, irks me a little bit.
Yeah.
It's like he's going to get all these accolades as he's, you know, he got here and they couldn't stop winning since he got there. But they have just ridiculous amounts of talent, especially, you know, all over the place.
They do have, yeah, it's the best roster in the NFL. They're so balanced. When you could put out a catch-and-run receiver in Deebo Samuel with a separation from Emmanuel Sanders, the best tight end in football, and George Kittle as a blocker. Solid offensive line, plenty of running backs, the best fullback in football, the best play caller, arguably. These are probably the two best offensive play callers. Kyle Shanahan and Andy.
Yep.
And then the best defensive line in football, pretty darn good secondary and at linebacker. They have a few playmakers, Quan Alexander, Fred Warner. They got tons of talent. I'm really interested in the difference in styles. So, you know, Chiefs are spread it out, chuck the ball deep, extend the play with the quarterback, and make plays downfield. The Niners are much more about executing the blocking schemes, creating space for the running backs, running the play action pass, and I mentioned the play callers, but so much of it comes down to every time you see the Niners play, they always mention everybody in the running back room runs 4.4 or better.
Yeah.
George Kittle's speed jumps off this. Deebo Samuel looks like the fastest player with the ball in his hand.
Yeah.
And then everybody knows about the Chiefs offense. So it's going to be a really fast game in terms of players out there. And then, so whenever it's a matchup like this, typically I lean towards whichever team is more balanced, and the Niners are more balanced offensively than the Chiefs are, but the Chiefs are just so explosive. The reason that I lean towards the Niners beyond just that, it seems like the real dangerous part of Patrick Mahomes, especially lately, has been extending the plays with his legs and either running it or throwing it outside the pocket. And the only way you're going to prevent that is if you have an overwhelming defensive.
Which the Niners have.
And they have the best one in football, and it's not just they got the best four, they got the best eight. They have they're eight deep on defensive lines. They have six first round picks, I think, in their defensive line room. It's just stupid.
Really?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
They're packed. So I mean, that's what makes me lean towards them. But I would never bet against Patrick Mahomes.
That's the thing. I mean, just like you said, normally I would go for defensive first teams. I mean, we've seen it time and time again where you get to the Super Bowl and you have arguably the best offense versus the best defense in the league. I mean, not always exactly like that, but pretty close. The Patriots last year, where our defense just came alive in the playoffs, and you play a Rams offense that was unstoppable throughout the year, and what happens? We beat the crap, you know, we beat them up pretty good. You saw it where Cam Newton in 2015 was this unstoppable juggernaut offense. Who could stop this? It was untouchable. And then you had Denver's defense come in and just wipe their faces on the floor. I mean, they kicked the crap out of them because they had a good defense. And that's what I want to say about this one, except I can't see the 49ers defense slowing down the Chiefs enough to the point where they can keep score with them.
Yeah.
That's kind of what it comes down to me. I feel like Kansas City is they're going to go on a run where they're going to probably get three touchdowns in a row somewhere in this game. Now, the only thing really biting them in the ass is they've been off to a really slow start in the playoffs so far. And, you know, the halftime, I know a lot of people don't mention it, but halftime in the Super Bowl is a huge thing. I really feel, because it's double to triple the amount of time of normal halftime.
Oh, I thought you were just a Jennifer Lopez fan.
No. I couldn't give a shit about her. but you know, that time really can screw with teams, and we've seen that in the past. I mean, look what it did to the Falcons a couple of years ago. They were winning 28-3 for most of the game. In the second half, they just were not the same team. So whoever that affects more, I don't know, because they're both shithead teams, I feel like. They're both well-coached shithead teams, like, that do stupid stuff on the field and say stupid stuff. So it's probably going to affect them both. So, you know, Kansas City's been a second-half team. It'll probably benefit them, if anything. I think San Francisco is going to give them a tough time, but, you know, they're going to go – Kansas City will go on the little run, and when the ball is going to have to be in Jimmy G's hands, I don't think they're going to have the dice to do it.
Fair enough. You also have to factor in Andy Reid making several clock mistakes.
It's and possibly even Shanahan.
Maybe. The thing I remember in the Titans game, Andy Reid was faced with – it was like a 4th and 2 or a 4th and 1. And he calls the timeout because, you know, they want, let's discuss. Let's see if we can figure out what we, I was just sitting there thinking, like, as a play caller and head coach, which mm-hmm. both of these guys are, going into your third down, you should already be thinking about, all right, if it's 4th and 1, am I going to go for this? You should not right. have to see the result of the third down play and then go, oh, would you look at that? It's 4th and 1.
Yeah,
what should
right?
I do?
I know.
What are you thinking about during the final 15 seconds when the guy is in the huddle telling the other team, I mean, telling his teammates, and then they go out before they run the play? I mean, watch the play. Definitely do that. But what are you doing those 15 seconds? Just ask yourself that simple question. If it's 4th and 1, am I going for it? Because the amount of times that they waste timeouts, like I saw Bill O'Brien do this. He puts the field goal team out there. All right, you know what? Let's call a timeout. Let's talk about it. Oh, you know what? Actually, let's put the field goal team back out there.
Yeah.
It's like, what the fuck did you waste that timeout for?
Literally. And that's what I'm talking about with Bill, you know, with the Patriots, just sitting back as a Patriots fan and watching, because, you know, you see all these things after the fact with Bill Belichick going up to his whole coaching staff. Know what you're doing for this play. Be present, be aware of the situation. He's always telling his coaching staff and players, be aware of the situation. Like, know what the hell you're going to do. Know what we're going to do. You know, what decisions you're going to make. And you, like you just said, these coaches just – you know, it doesn't fucking click sometimes.
They just wait until the situation is upon them and they're not prepared for it.
Right. It's unbelievable.
You have to start thinking.
Yeah. And we've seen that a lot.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to mention before we move on, just a quick side note, is I don't think it's much of a coincidence that, you know, looking at the Patriots offense and how it turned out, that the matchup in the Super Bowl also happens to be with the two best tight ends. You know, probably the number one and number two tight end on each side, who are huge, probably the biggest part of each of their offense. I mean, you look at what Kansas City did. What was it, 2 weeks ago versus Houston when they couldn't get anything going, and he just started going to Kelsey. That's it.
Well, he's by far their leading receiver.
I mean, it's no coincidence to me that we had no tight end this year. We recently learned that Ben Watson was playing on a torn Achilles heel, which I didn't even know was fucking possible to play on that.
That's so wild.
But especially at his age, but it just showed, and Matt Lacoste on the other side. So, you know, how important the tight end position is. We were talking, you know, texting each other about these games, like, wow, look at these tight, like, how nice would it have been this year to have a legit tight end? Look at how impactful all these tight ends have been for all these games. I mean, it's a huge, huge part of the offense, and we just didn't have that this year. And I feel like that, you know, even with our crap, you know, our talent or talentless at receiver, you know what they didn't have. If you had a good solid tight end, that would have made the, you know, I think it would have been fine. It would have been manageable.
It would have, well, yeah, especially if you had a game changer like one of these. Yeah, it goes without saying that these two are the leading receiver on each of their team, and need to look no further than last week. The Niners are playing the Packers. They're going on this drive at the end. It's going to seal it. I know it was mm-hmm. a 17-point game. It wasn't like it was really up for grabs, but the Packers had scored a couple times in the third and fourth quarter, and the Niners really just needed to hang on to the ball and run some clock. They get into, mm-hmm. I think it was like a 5th and 2 situation, and who do they go to? They split out three receivers to the right and George Kittle to the left, the exact same formation they did to try to close out the Saints game, and they just yep. run George Kittle on a short out route, and he gets just grabbed and effectively tackled. Not really. It was a really grabby play. They throw the flag on it. But against the Saints, he breaks out of that and he makes that incredible run down the sideline where he stiff arms a bunch of people and gets the face mask call. So these guys are huge, hugely important in everything that they mm-hmm. do. And that doesn't even mention what George Kittle brings in the blocking, which is why he's a little bit ahead of Kelsey.
Yeah, I agree. So,
let's we just spent
pretty good.
Spent like 25 minutes or half hour talking about other teams. Let's talk about the Pats real quick, the, you know, namesake of this podcast. Not too much news this time of year coming around. Let's do a quick one. Jawan Williams, the rookie out of Vanderbilt, the second round pick, real tall cornerback, gets arrested down in Tennessee. his home state.
Fantastic.
He got stopped for speeding and then was arrested for drug possession paraphernalia. That's going to be a problem going forward. Also, in the same vein, Patrick Chung had his drug case effectively dismissed.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the Spygate, the new Spygate thing, still hasn't fruition decision.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. We haven't heard anything yet. It seems like they're kind of just fading that one out.
Or they're waiting for some down period in terms of media coverage.
Yeah, you're right. We'll see.
It could be coming out soon. The other thing I want to talk about, some Brady rumors are circulating. He bought a house in Connecticut, and some people are like, oh, that means he's leaving the Pats. And I'm like, you know, it's the New England Patriots, right?
Yeah, right. And he's still in New England.
Yeah, and he's not – what's that closer to, the Giants or Jets? Like, he's not going there. They both have young quarterbacks.
Yeah.
So that doesn't
matter to me. He also talked to Mark Davis for 20-some-odd minutes at
the UFC.
The UFC fight, which is whatever. People are like, oh, Vegas, that'd be a good fit for him. I think the whole Vegas is going to be a disaster.
Maybe.
There's absolute train wreck.
I don't know why he would want to go. Well, the reasons for leaving the Patriots would either be relationships are afraid, or he wants more weapon. And
or more money.
Or more money. He could get money just about anywhere.
Yeah.
It doesn't. Relationships, obviously, he'd have to leave. And then for weapons, they don't have. They lost Antonio Brown, too. You know, they don't have weapons. They got a good running back. They got a good tight end.
That's about it.
Tyrell Williams. They don't have that. It doesn't seem like that big.
No.
For me. This the Brady story is kind of taking over, and every article you read about it is like, this will be the story, the biggest offseason story since Peyton Manning left the Colts. And I want to just say, you know, Drew Brees is an unrestricted agent also, right?
Yeah, Brees is not getting a lot of love, but a lot of people there's also people saying that teams would rather Brees just because he's younger.
He is 2 years. Well, yeah, he's like a year and a half younger. Just turned 41, where Brady will turn 43 in August. I don't know. I don't know who I would rather have. I mean, I know I would rather have Tom Brady. I should say that. But if I were another team, it's not like one of them has noticeably played differently. Drew Brees has Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara and Jared Cook.
Right.
He had plenty of weapons, but if I were really evaluating them, I would go, how much better did Drew Brees look than Teddy Bridgewater?
Right.
Not that much better.
Well, I mean, I feel like if you put Brady on that offense, they probably would have won that game.
Won it all, probably.
Probably. It's an interesting, yeah. I mean, the free agency thing, we've heard a ton. There's a ton of rumors. Everyone's trying to, you know, get clicks by different stupid things. And, you know, don't believe, honestly, my advice for the whole situation for any Patriots fans that are nervous, don't buy into any of the bullshit, because the way it is inside of the NFL or inside of Gillette Stadium is they all know what's going on, and they just let out stupid little tidbits get out, and everyone forms all these wild opinions. Most of the time, it's nothing even close. Point and example is when we signed Randy Moss or traded for him back in 2007, there were all these rumors because Randy Moss had a hamstring injury and he wasn't in preseason at all. There were all these rumors swirling. Oh, the Patriots are going to trade Randy Moss. He's a perfect cut candidate. They're going to get rid of him. He's not playing. They don't like him, blah, 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 this, that, and the other thing. Randy Moss sees this. This is from Randy Moss saying this. Some of you might have seen it on one of the NFL top 100 players. Randy Moss calls Bill Belichick. Hey, Bill, you know, there's a lot of rumors out there that you're going to cut me or trade me. I just wanted to see, you know, what we talked about, that everything's, you know, as we said. Bill goes, fuck no, I'm not trading you. I don't know what the fuck they're talking about. Don't listen to any of them. Boom.
Done and done. Yeah.
So nobody knows what Tom Brady's doing outside of Robert Kraft, Jonathan Kraft, Bill Belichick, and Tom Brady, probably their families.
Brady's clearly trying to get some leverage. How every time he's asked about it, I'm keeping my options open.
Yeah.
I'm keeping my mind open. He's creating leverage. I'm not sure what it's for.
They both are.
It's for money. Some people say it's
years. Well, the thing years. Is, yeah. So what do you think is a fair contract? I think we said like 25.
I think 25 is fair.
I think that's fair for the Patriots.
Okay.
I was actually just looking up the contracts in the NFL. I don't know if it was 2019 or going into 2020. I don't remember. I think it was for 2019. But there are, you know, Brady was number 13 at $23 million.
Yeah. Well, I was actually just reading about Dak Prescott's new contract. He's also the amount of quarterbacks that are free agent. It's pretty crazy. This, we didn't even mention Philip Rivers.
We just moved to Florida. He's out of fucking LA.
Cal. Yep. Big Philly. We'll talk about him in a
second. Eli Manning just retired.
But they were talking about Russell Wilson's contract, where, you know, everybody knows Russell Wilson got $35 million per year.
Yeah.
But what they didn't say is that he got $31 million because he had an existing contract. So it's an extension. So it's like his contract was already worth whatever amount.
Right.
And then they tacked on more money. And then when you add it up, it's $35 million per year. But he was already guaranteed some money going forward. It's like his signing bonus was already accumulating going forward.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so his actual contract is 31 per year.
Okay.
And then Kirk Cousins is 28 per year. They think Dak is going to come in right around 30. So I don't care. Really, if you want to get Brady 28, fine.
Exactly. That's how I feel.
Totally fine.
I mean, what are we talking about here? $5 or $6 million?
And the problem that I see, this team is, well, first of all, it's coming. It's going to be 2 years coming off a championship. It's championship ready still.
Yeah.
And it's just packed with veterans at every position group. And
mm-hmm.
It's like if you're going to try to put a rookie quarterback or some nobody back there and just derail this whole thing. I mean, how fast is Dante Hightower going to want to get out of town? How fast is Stephon Gilmore going to say, hey, I'm not re-upping to stay here?
Right.
If you put some shithead behind center.
The whole point of Brady leaving for years was that we were going to have a groomed guy that's been in the system for Brady to coach up. And Garoppolo was not coach up, but just some guy to see, okay, this is what it takes. All right, here's this guy. He's been doing it for 20 years. He's won 6 championships, and this is how he does it. Whether or not Brady talks to him or not, I don't care. He sees what a champion, you know, what it takes to get to a championship in some respects. And we kind of had that with Garoppolo. It just happened too fast. We found the guy too fast. He matured too quickly. He wanted to start. Fine. It's understandable. I feel like we still made the right decision. I think we all agree that we gave up too little. But Brady won an MVP and has been to 2 Super Bowls and won them since we came. So won one since we traded him. So, I mean, it's like, we made the right decision.
Definitely. And at the time, Garoppolo had played less than 2 whole games.
Yeah, exactly.
And has since torn his ACL.
Yeah, right. We always forget about that. That
durability concern.
So, you know, and here we go. Okay, you sign him. You have 2 years, and that's somebody sitting under him. That, to me, seems perfect. I would, if I were the Patriots, I'd say, okay, you know what? We'll give up a little more money to Brady, get him back here. And so, you know, we can groom the next guy. We can draft someone this year, or we can bring someone in and groom them if Stidham's not the guy.
Well, he wants multiple.
Yeah, he wants 2 years.
Yeah.
So that's perfect.
Yeah.
Give him 2 years. You coach someone up for 2 years behind. I feel like that's perfect. 2 years is the mark.
All right. We're in agreement on that.
Yeah.
This is going to be an ongoing story and will not be resolved for it. Back to Philip Rivers. He's from Alabama. He went to college in North Carolina. He moved his family to Florida. He wants to be somewhere in that area. I don't know how many more years left he has. He definitely wants to play another year.
Yeah.
And I
saw him, Tampa Bay?
That's what I was getting to. I saw him linked to the Colts, which makes some sense to me. It's a pretty good team.
He looks like such a piece of shit in that jersey.
I know. I was thinking about how bad he would look in that. But the offensive line is really good, and that's what he needs. He's Kirk Cousins' age, but actually, that's a bad example because, like I said, Cousins is a play-action guy. But I like the idea of him with Bruce Arians in Tampa. It's so perfect because Jameis excelled in that system except for the interceptions. And Philip Rivers throws interceptions with the best of them. I love it. I think it would be so entertaining what he would do down there, his personality, all fired up. He loves the heat.
I could see it.
I could totally see it. And from my perspective, the Buccaneers have nothing to gain by bringing Jameis. I don't know what you...
He's gone.
He is who you think he is.
Yeah, he's gone.
We've seen enough from him to realize this guy, he can put up numbers, but turn the ball over ASAP. Some of the people in the locker room, I can't imagine that anybody respects him or is motivated by him. I mean, some of the pregame speeches he's given are jaw-droppingly bad.
Yeah.
I just
He is not good.
I don't think they gain anything by bringing him back. They could be better with Phil Rivers. Maybe they're worse. What does it matter? Neither one is the long-term solution.
Yeah, I think you draft someone young and you have Philip. I think you're in a decent spot. Jameis is not the answer. There's a lot, like you said, there's a lot of free agent quarterbacks this year, and half of them, more than half, are just garbage.
Yeah, Marcus Mariota. I saw him in the article. I was like, I don't care where you go wherever you.
Yeah, just don't come to the fucking Patriots.
They mentioned Chicago, and I think that's a really good spot for, because Chicago needs to, they need to design an offense that takes Trubisky's athleticism. And yeah, he's not even athletic. If Mitch is going to stink, like I think he will again, then you put Mariota in. Teddy Bridgewater, last year, takes a visit with the Dolphins and decides, you know what, I'm going to just be a backup back in New Orleans.
And he came up, it was pretty good.
Yeah, everybody thought at the time, he signed a one-year, $7 million contract to the Saints backup. Everybody thought at the time, you know, he likes New Orleans, he wants to stay there, and Drew Brees only has so long. Going to wait in the wings and take over.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's the case, but Brees wants to keep playing. And Teddy Bridgewater played half of this year, got his feet wet, and proved that he is an NFL caliber quarterback right now.
Yeah, he could start.
Yeah, and so
he proved that.
If he's going to go back to the Saints along with Brees, he's going to be in that like $7 million ring. Because Brees takes top dollar. He always has.
He always does,
like,
yeah.
And, or Bridgewater could go somewhere else, like Miami again. He's from Miami. He could go somewhere else and be a starter and be making more than $20 million a year. I mean, Nick Foles is a $20 million backup.
Yeah, because he sucked.
He sucked, but he was seen as starting caliber, and so he got $20 million a year.
Yeah.
Would Bridgewater, in good conscience, pass that up to be a backup for a guy who may not relinquish?
Yep. Yeah, that's not bad.
I think he's going to leave, and I think Miami's a good destination.
He's gone.
Unless they want to go.
Not bad. Yeah, not bad. Not bad at all.
And I think the Saints' heir apparent might be Taysom Hill.
I think so. I think it is.
Do you know Taysom Hill's 29?
No.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah, because he's a Mormon, so out of high school, he did whatever trip they do where they give, you know, it's like military service. You have to serve him out for a certain amount of years.
Wow.
Preaching the good word. So he went out for a couple of years after high school, did that, and then he went to college, spent 5 years. And then as an undrafted free agent, where did he wind up? Green Bay.
New Orleans. Oh, my God.
Green Bay. Mike McCarthy had him and cut him, and Sean Payton picked him up the next day, and everything else is.
Wow.
Yep.
Wild stuff. Wild stuff.
Well, enjoy. I think that's all we got here. So I'm just going to say to everybody at home, and enjoy Patriots week. Don't tune into the Pro Bowl. Don't even think about it. Move on. Do something else this weekend. But get ready for the Super Bowl. I think it's going to be a really interesting. It's going to be a clash of brains, a clash of speed, and a clash of styles.
It's going to be a good one. Absolutely. Yep. Get your popcorn ready. Shout out to you, Dude Electronics, for new podcast studio over here. Great stuff. And yeah, enjoy a week off and Radio Row and the Super Bowl in 2 weeks.
How about that?
All right, or a week.
All right, we'll talk to y'all later. See ya.
Adios.